24.
It's episode 24.
Episode 24.
Welcome to Ethnically Ambiguous with Anna.
And Shireen.
And Shireen. Oh, I'm just joking.
Is there an echo in here?
Is there an echo in here?
Okay.
All right, so in this episode, we are back from our break, and we are trying a somewhat new format out, kind of, not really, where we each talk about something, and I'm going to talk about Mohammad Mossadegh, the former Prime Minister of Iran.
And I'm going to talk about Israel and Palestine, and some really important people that are currently suffering at the hands of Israel.
Yes, and then we are going to get into a nice little personal discussion about mental illness and how Middle Eastern families deal with it.
Yes, it's very great. First episode 2018. Stay tuned! Meow.
Who are we? Where did we come from? Who do we become? What is it to be? What to be is it? Where are we? Who are my parents? Where are my pants? Why were we born?
We are Ethnically Ambiguous.
Da, 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 da.
We're back!
We're back! From outer space! Yes,
nope. Okay. You can keep saying. I was kind of letting you do the solo.
Oh, okay. Oh, copy that. We're back!
Hi!
Hello!
Last week we took a break. This week we are back.
It was pretty good looking back on it that we had a break because I had the flu and I was basically bedridden for a very long time, spent New Year's in my bed. So that was fun.
Shireen died.
I was very sick.
We learned that Shireen's been dead for 20 years. So we took last week off because we didn't take Christmas off because we don't technically celebrate Christmas.
Yeah, fuck y'all.
Middle Eastern people. Jesus Christ.
Sorry.
The Christians are listening.
Well, but I just found out on the way here on NPR that the Christian Orthodox Church has been giving land to and in selling property to Israelis. So fuck that shit.
Where?
In Bethlehem.
Are you serious?
Mm-hmm. So.
I have no respect for anybody anymore. So the reason we're dropping an episode on... We didn't drop an episode on New Year's Day is because we celebrate New Year's. I observe New Year's.
Yes, I observe New Year's from my bed.
I don't really observe Christmas because, like, my parents don't celebrate Christmas, so, like,
well,
I really
there's
can't.
Also another reason why we took a little bit of a break, and that's because we're going through a transition.
That's right. We're transitioning.
We are transitioning.
So we no longer
identify
as a feral audio podcast.
Thank you.
We now
don't refer to us as a feral.
We've changed our adjectives. No longer feral.
No longer feral.
So we're currently in limbo right now.
Yeah, we're a little bit of a...
We're limb dogs.
We're doing that limbo.
Mm-hmm.
Limbo. I'm very good at that game.
But by next month, we will technically officially become a How Stuff Works podcast.
What is How Stuff Works, Anna?
It is the network I work at.
What?
And yes, am I contractually obligated to move all my podcasts over there now?
Maybe. Maybe. That's up to us to know, you guys.
No, I'm not, but I am. I mean, it's just like a great opportunity, old Jack O'Brien.
It really is. And it's a great network, and we're really excited to be on it. And Farrell is... If you've been keeping up, and if you haven't been, it's going to be a thing of the past. And it was very kismet, and we're happy to be on How Stuff Works. And we were going to be launching, when we officially launch, we'll have a beautiful website and everything, and we'll make a big announcement.
Yeah, there won't be any lapse in releases.
No.
We're going to very smoothly transition over.
As long as you guys still have iTunes and whatever you listen to your podcasts on, you guys can still listen to us and be all of our friends. So, yeah!
I'm going to turn my headphones down for a second. It's just a little loud.
Oh, okay.
Your voice is very piercing.
Oh, shit.
I'm just joking. I'm not joking, but, like, I just have a headache, so, like...
How do you know how to do that?
I work at a podcast network.
Right, we just established that.
Okay, do you keep talking a little?
I'm talking. Am I still piercing?
Is that right, Matt? I don't know what I'm doing. No, wait, no, this one.
Hello. Hello. Piercing. Piercing. Piercing.
Ah,
Let's like triple. Let's keep all of this
in. Let's keep all of this in.
Keep it in, Matt. It's very important that people know that my head hurts and that
my voice is piercing.
I needed to turn the headphones down a little. Okay, now that we're back,
we're also kind of going to be changing the format a little bit.
Kind of. We're not going to go like crazy on like every news story anymore. We're just going to kind of pick one like overarching thing
that for each of us.
Yes, for each of us. So like, I might talk about Iran, or Shireen might talk about Iran, but we're not going to tell each other what we're going to talk about. So we're going to come through with like the hot takes.
Yeah, and then basically educate the other on what we're talking about.
Yeah.
Rather than going through a list of links and
because this now forces me to prepare,
mm-hmm.
which before I would just roll through with a Google Doc of links and then just start
winging it. No more winging it. That's for Wingstop. Also, who goes to Wingstop?
I know a lot of people that go to Wingstop.
Oh, well, who knew?
It's like the premier wing destination.
Oh. how was your break? How was your holiday?
I'm glad you asked, Shireen.
Okay.
okay. Okay, that was a joke. It's a rhetorical question. Well, I guess we have to hear something. It was fine.
Your white boyfriend visited your parents' house, right?
Mm-hmm.
How was that?
I mean, it was fine. It's not the first time he's been there. They all love each other. It's boring.
Does he like Persian food? Does your mom make Persian food?
Yeah, she made a ton of Persian food. He really likes like Zeresk Polo chicken.
Ooh.
All my Persians who know what that is. It's kind of like a red sauce chicken, a soft chick.
Mm.
Yeah, my mom makes that for him. I don't know. He eats it.
Yeah. My sister's white boyfriend also visited us for a couple days, and we made homemade falafel and hummus,
oh, yeah.
And it was a Syrian feast.
I saw those photos. Delicious.
It was a Syrian feast, and he really enjoyed it. My mom really, really loves, she's a really good cook, and my mom really loves to feed him, because he likes to eat. And
hungry people.
She likes that he likes her food.
That's good.
But then, as we were eating, I learned that fucking Rachel Ray has no fucking class and mm-hmm. called hummus and hamara, which she didn't even say hamara. She said it was red pepper paste, Israeli dishes. And it got me really, really just fired up.
Yeah, this was a tweet she put out where she had this whole feast of like hummus, basically like all this like Middle Eastern food.
Yeah.
And then it was just like, look at this Israeli feast. And you're like,
it's
oh,
like,
you
know,
dumb bitch.
Israel's been around for like only like 60 years, right, bitch? Like, come on. Like, it's not like maybe like 80, whatever. But you can't just have to be Israeli food, you basically go to a Palestinian's house and steal the food,
yeah.
and then say, this is Israeli food.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah. It
That's
made me
absurd.
Livid. Livid.
Because it does that thing, like, we retweeted this man who corrected her. I'm sorry, I forget his name off the top of my head. He corrected her, and he was like, basically what you're doing is what all of Israel is doing. She's trying to erase an ethnicity.
Yeah.
Like, a group of people.
By
Palestinians.
Yeah.
By also not even acknowledging that they're like, food is their food, and being like, no, it's Israeli food. It's like, can you not have anything of your own? Why do you keep stealing?
It's so fucking
like, Palestinians are literally should turn to Israel and be like, why are you so obsessed with me?
Why are you so obsessed with me? But yeah, that made me really mad. But yeah, our falafel was great, and it was yummy.
It's delicious. I love that red tablecloth.
Yeah, that's my mom's signature.
She's like very like, she should have her own Instagram, like, but like a presence, you know?
Yeah.
You know how like all Middle Eastern parents have Instagrams, but they don't post anything. They just like watch you from afar.
Yeah, exactly.
They like, you post, this is what I did. I posted a photo recently of me like in front of like this giant donut ice cream dish. Like I went out it was from a friend's birthday, and my mom texted me, I hope you didn't eat that all yourself. Which I was like, what are you talking about? She's like, the photo you posted. You should be healthier. And I was like, okay, first of all, like, get off my Instagram.
That's funny.
And then I was like, yeah, I ate it all myself, Mom. I put my face into
right,
it.
Right, right.
My dad has somewhat of a presence. He posted,
like
a few photos.
I like his comments on everything.
Did you see his most recent photo?
I don't think I follow him.
Not his recent photo, his recent comment on one of our photos. Abby, our friend Abby.
Oh, no, I didn't see it. What did he say?
She illustrated
our friend Abby illustrated me and Anna, and it was really, really flattering. And and badass, and she's very talented.
Yeah.
And very happy.
And my dad wrote, he was trying to write two beautiful women, but he wrote toe beautiful women. Which I was like, I mean, he's trying, you know?
Yeah.
Toe beautiful women. Yeah. Which is just like, oh, dad, just spell check. When that little red line comes underneath your words, that means you're spelling everything wrong. So.
Oh, gosh. Dads. Moms. Where would we be without them? I love my mom and my dad. It was nice being home when I was sick. Not that it was nice being sick, but it was nice at least being home and not by myself in my apartment. Nice having my mom take care of me.
Mama.
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 What is this podcast? Okay, so, Anna, what do you have to share
now,
with us
this
today?
This topic/story I want to talk about is one that I think about a lot, and I really always wanted to look deeper into it because this is a person who's very legendary in Iranian history, if you will. So, Jesus, I just like broke my own ears. I want to talk about, sorry, I'm literally like Googling. That's how good I am at my job. Hey guys, you know,
you're typing a lot.
Sorry. I had to literally search it on my thingy to pop up. Okay. I made a whole like document of with all this shit. So and for some reason I like closed it as soon as I got here.
Mm-hmm.
And then like while we start talking,
makes
I forgot
sense.
To reopen.
Makes sense. Yeah, yeah.
Because you guys, that's the level of professionalism you can get with mm-hmm. me. Mm-hmm. I can't believe anyone ever hired me and like gives me a salary. It's pretty wild.
Yeah, I can't believe
like I show up to work every day like,
are they sure? Did they make a mistake?
Well, no. I just more like I show up to work every day and everyone's like, hey, you know you're supposed to be here at 10. And I'm like, what time is it? And that is every day. Sometimes I work Saturdays and Sundays.
Wow. What
I record a podcast
Anna, what were we
every day of the week. Just real quick, wanted to tell you that. I am podcast drunk. Okay. So my story is going to be about Mohammad Mossadegh.
Mossadegh.
Now, if you do not know
who is Mohammad Mossadegh?
He was the prime minister of Iran from 1951 to 1953.
A very short time.
Who he was overthrown by the government.
That makes sense.
Of Amrika and the British. So basically the CIA and the UK's secret intelligence service, whatever it's called, nobody even knows. They overthrew him.
Holy shit.
Now, I bet you're wondering why. Slow down, Shireen. Slow down.
But why?
Let's jump back X amount many years before it happened. I don't know. I don't know math. So Mohammad Mossadegh was born in Tehran, and he's from a very prominent family in Tehran, basically, like, really rich people who, like, worked, like, government official jobs. Mm-hmm. I don't know what they're technically called back then, but you get the idea. He's not exactly, like, from, like, a socialitic, that's not a word, socialitic family.
Yeah.
Which is for sure not the term to use in that situation, but whatever.
They weren't socialized, they were just
They were well-to-do,
yeah.
If you will. I will. Okay. but basically, you know, he went to good schools. Mm-hmm. He went abroad to Europe to get, like, a doctorate degree and in law in, like, Switzerland. And then he studied in Paris. And he basically had all the opportunities afforded to him. So he did really well for himself. He became a lawyer. He was an author. He was, like, I don't know. He worked in, like, administrative positions.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the age of 24... he got elected to join the Persian parliament, which was is called the Majlis of Iran.
The ripe old age of 24, huh?
Yeah, who's got the time? But he couldn't technically take that. He couldn't assume his seat because he wasn't 30, and you have to be like between the ages mm-hmm. of 30 and 70 to work in Iranian government. So he couldn't do it. But that's how wanted he was. And people
damn.
Were like basically like, voting for him, even though he wasn't even eligible to, you know,
serve
do the position.
The yeah.
So many years later, so that was, I don't know, when he was 24, probably like, I mean, who even knows what year that is? Probably like 1920 or some,
mm-hmm.
maybe 1930, 1940. Here's the thing. I don't even know. So, but in 1951, the Shah of Iran, who at the time was Reza Pahlavi, not mm-hmm. to be confused with his son, whose also name is Shah Reza or Mohammad Reza Pahlavi, who is the one that was part of the overthrowing of Mossadegh. This is his father, Reza.
Okay, so they have the exact same name.
Same name. There's only three names in Iran. It's Mohammad, Reza, and Reza.
Wait, so just so I understand. So is the Shah, the position of the Shah, is
the
there
Shah
a religious
the
connotation to that? No, just king, secular.
No. The Ayatollah is the religious cleric who okay. is like the head figure.
Okay.
So the Shah is just a king.
Okay.
And then the Ayatollah is like the religious leader. And then the prime minister's just a prime minister. You know,
okay.
he's just the dude who's there. So the prime minister like runs the parliament for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
Or he's just like the guy who's like up on in parliament. So after he like was in the parliament for a very long time, the Shah, the original Shah, anointed him in 1951 as prime minister. After like a, there was like a really good, he nominated him and then he got voted in by the parliament.
Right.
And so he was very popular. So like he,
Mossadegh
was very popular and, like people loved him. He ran this group called the National Front who were just like a bunch of like people who supported him. It was like a group of people who were all about Mossadegh and like they were a group of people that believed that foreign involvement shouldn't happen. Like there should be zero foreign involvement in mm-hmm. Iran, which the original dynasty, the Qajar dynasty, I don't know if I'm saying that right. Qajar, who was the dynasty before the Pahlavis, who was Reza Pahlavi, the Shah who anointed him. They were a family, like a dynasty that was okay. They had all this like foreign involvement stuff going on. Mm-hmm. They were okay with it. So this new dynasty is, you know, they're kind of trying to, they're moderate on it, but Mossadegh does not want it, and his people, his supporters don't want any sort of foreign involvement either. So that's when it comes to the Anglo-Iranian Oil Company, which is
okay.
this British oil company that had, like, heavy involvement in, like, Iranian affairs. So they, like, they, you know, took all the oil and sold it and made a bunch of money off of Iranian oil. And Mossadegh wasn't into that, and his supporters weren't into that. Anyway, but Mossadegh, during his, like, time in office, he, like, brought on a bunch of, like, social reforms. Like, people loved him. He had a bunch of, like, he created unemployment compensation.
Whoa.
And he created, like, he made that, like, factory owners had to pay benefits to sick and injured workers. And, like peasants were freed from forced labor on, like, their landlord's land and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then he passed this, like, Land Reform Act, which forced, according to Wikipedia, because that's where I get all my information, it forced landlords to turn over 20% of their revenues to their tenants. And then these revenues could be placed in a fund for development projects such as public baths, rural housing, and pest control. So, like, welfare programs,
yeah.
you know? Then in May of probably 50... Would I say 51?
That's
no.
When...
Yeah, May 51... Mossadegh decided to nationalize the Anglo-Iranian Oil Company, and basically what that means is they make it they take a private company and make it public.
Mm-hmm.
So now it belongs to the people versus like the British
right.
Outside people. So then it like canceled all its like oil concession and expropriating like assets and all that stuff. And Mossadegh was just like, we can't keep letting the British government control Iran's oil. And so because of that, the British got very angry and they were like, you know what, fuck you, Mossadegh. What we're going to do is we're going to make it impossible for Iran to sell any oil. So we're going to create all these blockades. And so they like, the British government threatened legal action against anyone who would buy oil from Iran. And they just created a giant boycott of Iran. So because of this, the British intelligence in Iran decided that they wanted to start, like, fucking the entire system from the inside. So they started paying, like, people in Iran to start, like, causing trouble.
What?
Yeah. So they would have, like, apparently they paid, like, £10,000 per month to some, like, the Rashidian brothers, who are these, like, very influential royal people in Iran, to, like, get in people's heads and talk shit and all that. So because the British also, like, shut down Iran's ability to sell oil, like, Iran was losing a lot of money because of that.
Yeah.
So, like, because the government wasn't bringing in any money. So, but in a way, like, Mossadegh was still popular because his whole thing is that he, like, strove to, like, decrease the power of the crown and bring more power to the people. So, like, mm-hmm. people were really into that. And so he, also decreased the power of the Shah and, like, his spending budget and all that. So, like, the king wasn't going out of control and, like, using all this money to, like, basically, like, taxes to pay for, like, fancy chairs. I don't know what he was, just a guess. So all that happened. And so all this, like, social reform was going on. So he still had popularity, even though, like, people were, like, losing money because of, the lack of oil being gone out. So, at the same time, the British is, like, in Iran, like, fucking with him by, like, I don't know, like, trying to turn people against him. But unfortunately, because of, like, the British, like, Iranians were just, they're getting poorer and, you know, shit was going down little by little.
Right.
So, finally, the UK was, like, so upset by all of this that they decided to go to the U.S. And the U.S. at first was like, you know, we're not... So they went to the U.S. and initially were like, we want to overthrow Mossadegh. The U.S. was, like, originally like, ooh, you know, like, I don't know about that. And then American Secretary of State Dean Acheson... He has a quote that said that the British were destructive and determined on a rule or ruin policy in Iran. So that's how they originally felt. But then, dun dun dun, enter Winston bitch-ass Churchill.
Are you fucking kidding me?
I mean, that's the thing, is like anything bad goes on, you like turn to your left, like, is that Winston Churchill right there involved somehow?
Fucking Winston fucking Churchill!
He's behind every bad thing that's ever happened.
If you guys don't know why I don't like Winston Churchill, it's fucking because he was the one that basically handed over Palestine to and made it Israel. Like, yeah. This guy needs to get his fucking butt out of everything, and now there's a fucking movie about him called, like, oh, I tried so hard, I'm so great.
Yeah. So, basically what Churchill did is he got into Eisenhower, Dwight D. Eisenhower, who was president at the time, he got into his ear and told him, if we do not overthrow Mossadegh, he's going to turn to communism, he's going to turn to the pro-Soviet vibes and become a Soviet, I don't know, like, communist, and I don't know, and that time there was all these, like, Cold War fears, so... Dwight Eisenhower was all like, oh, you're right, mister. Mister, you sound like you're from London. You know?
Yes. You sound smart.
Yeah.
You
and sound so, smart. In March 1953, the CIA approved 1 million to be used in any way that would bring about the fall of Mossadegh. So that's, and then the CIA started like a propaganda campaign against Mossadegh by using their like radio stations and all that and whatnot. And like people would go out and fuck shit up, like I said before. But now the British had the help of the CIA, so it was getting even more crazy. And the plot was known as Operation Ajax. So one of the biggest things that they had to do was get the Shah, who at this time, now the Shah is this actual Shah. So the father Shah, the government had kind of forced him to step down and give his son the position of king. So now it is actually the Shah that we all think about, Reza Pahlavi,
okay.
The son, Junior Shah. So now he's in position.
Okay.
So they have to convince this Shah Junior to sign off on this, like, really questionable fucking bullshit. And the Shah is very, like, ooh, it takes a lot to persuade him.
Uh-huh.
And they basically tell him that they're going to do it without him, so we better just get his shit together. So they, like, basically bribe his family. They give his, like, family, like, mink coats and money. And then they just, like, change his mind because he's a fucking bitch ass. And so Operation Ajax is in motion. So we're... The help of General Fazlullah Zahedi, they basically start a riot in the streets and, like, basically just savage shit goes down where they're, like, there's, like, violent clashes in the street. There's looting, burning of mosques, newspapers. Almost, like, 300 people are dead. Like, shit goes wild. And the government has completely turned. It's a coup d'etat. The coup d'etat is in motion. And there's nothing Mossadegh can do because... his entire country has basically been turned against him, and the people who are still with him, the National Front, just are like, they're like cornered, basically. They're out of their league, if you will. And they get the main Ayatollah at the time, I believe his name was Kashani. Ugh, God, I may have that wrong just because I'm going off memory on that thing. They get him to turn against Mossadegh. And that move is like a very big turning point to have your Ayatollah turn against you, because that's like, oh, now the religious clerics are against you. And so they were able to also go in and convince like other religious figures in the country. They had literally, CIA had plans to go in and tell these religious figures that Mossadegh was going to like tax them on stuff and not give them certain things or funds and stuff. And these people are all literally just pretending to get these religious clerics to think that Mossadegh is against them when he's not. Like, there's all this stuff. So they were mind fucking people. Right. This is all the US and the British just being like, no. So while this is all happening, the Shah went to Rome to be like away in its safety. And so basically, with the help of Fazlollah Zahedi, who they are now announcing as the new prime minister, they were able to take down Mossadegh. And he was, he tried to flee, but they arrested him, Mossadegh, and held him in custody while they like made all these changes. And then the Shah came back. And then Zahedi, he basically ran the new government and made an agreement again with oil, with foreign oil, with the British and the U.S. to restore the Iranian oil world market. And they gave most of the shares to the U.S. and the U.K. And then because of that, the U.S. like aggressively funded the Shah's government, and they gave him whatever he wanted. They gave him a secret police force. And then they held Mossadegh. They said he was held under house arrest until he died in 1967, and they wouldn't let him have a funeral, and they buried him in his living room.
What?
So it's that level
That's
of
so
shittiness
sad.
That was treated. And all of this is the reason that the Shah was overthrown in 1979 in the Iranian Revolution, because of how much unrest. Now, Mossadegh was really into secular democracy, so he was like the perfect middle ground leader.
Yeah.
In a way, they, by basically going way too left with the Shah, Iran came back and is now so far right. Like, there was like this like boomerang effect where it went too far and now it's gone back way too far again. So
now there's all these protests happening.
So in a way, America created its own monster. Iran is today.
That sounds so familiar. America created its own monster?
Yes. And for a very long time, Eisenhower would not admit that they had anything to do with it. And I believe in 2000, a bunch of like CIA files came out that when they were released, that admitted to like all this crazy shit they did. So, yeah, I mean, it's insane.
That is really insane, because I feel like America has this tendency to put its nose where it doesn't belong and make problems. Like, I don't know, Al-Qaeda or this whole CIA Project Ajax bullshit. Like, what the hell, America?
Yeah.
God.
They fucked up hard. And basically, they weren't even ready for like anything. Like they got in, they fucking acted a fool, and there's this quote on Wikipedia I found that said, "Critics say the scheme was paranoid, colonial, illegal, and immoral, and truly caused the blowback suggested in the pre-coup analysis. The extent of this blowback over time was not completely clear to the CIA, as they had an inaccurate picture of the stability of the Shah's regime. The people liked the Shah, but they all knew he was corrupt, and they all knew how involved America and the UK was in all of it." And I think they really like underestimated the popularity of the Shah and how like discontented, I don't even know this word, people were with the whole situation. And now Mossadegh is like a legendary figure in Iranian history, and people look to him as like an ideal leader, and he's like one of the most famous like figures in Iranian history. It's wild.
Whoa.
It's like a really crazy thing the U.S. did and is now like, look at Iran, they're such bad people. And it's like, it's a republic, like an Islamic republic, because you guys went in and fucked with the one good thing that Iran had, which is like an actual person who cared about social reform and wanted the power to be within the people and not the government. And now the country's a regime. So anyway, that's my story.
Wow. Well, my story is a little bit more in the now, but that was really, I think it's really important.
Are you saying I'm living in the past, Shereen?
No, I just mean it's important to understand the past to understand the present with all the protests that are happening now in Iran and realizing what the unrest is for and stuff like that. But fuck, man. I want to talk about, you guessed it, Palestine and Israel. My dad actually brought this to my attention, the first thing I want to talk about. And the first person I want to talk about is a man called Ibrahim Abu Turuye. He was 29. He lost both of his legs in 2008 in an Israeli missile strike on Gaza because he was protesting. On December 15th, Israeli troops shot him in the head. He was in a wheelchair protesting again with a sign in his hand, and they shot him in the head, and three other people were also killed that day, but all shot either in the neck or the head.
Jesus Christ.
And this is all protesting. They didn't have any weapons on them. I think it's really disgusting and telling of the Israeli military's tactics when all of these people are shot directly in the head or in the neck or just like basically shoot to kill, because it really just, they don't see these Palestinians as people. They see them as, targets and,
seems like a nuisance.
Yeah. And, Ibrahim, the victim that I'm talking about, he had taken part in several border protests, and he had become this image on social media. He was always shown carrying a Palestinian flag. He cleaned cars to support his family. I'll post this article where there's a video where you can see him clean cars and protest and go about his life, and he is so beautiful. And I basically cried when I watched this video. It's not fair. And that's the first thing I want to talk about. Happened on December 15th. Brings me to the next thing I want to talk about, which is, 16-year-old girl, Ahed Tamimi. She is, she has been indicted by Israel. They've want to charge her with 12 charges. She was detained on December 19th, 4 days after a video, was posted on social media of her confronting soldiers outside of her family's home in the village of Nabi Saleh. Her family, the Tamimis, are very well known, as protesters and as activists. The incident where she slaps an Israeli soldier basically on the arm, telling him to leave the property, it happened moments after Israeli forces shot her 15-year-old cousin point blank in the face with a rubber bullet. And this 15-year-old was in a coma for 72 hours and experienced intense, severe internal bleeding.
Jesus.
And yeah, her 20-year-old cousin Noor, who also appeared in the video, she was arrested and actually released just yesterday. She was also charged with assaulting the officer. She had just been released on bail. And her mom also was arrested, Nariman. Her mom, Nariman, has been arrested by Israelis several times for protesting again. It's a little interesting that so this family, the Tamimis, I saw this video of the mom talking, and she talks about how strong women in the Palestinian culture are so valued, and she fears that the Israeli army are trying to they've noticed that, and they're trying to like stifle that. The first Palestinian teen that was killed by Israel in 2018 was a 17-year-old, Mus'ab El-Tamimi, who is a cousin of one of the Tamimis. And it's just sad because the Israeli army, they said that he, quote, appeared to be holding a gun, but then it wasn't confirmed. So when you shoot to kill, there's no, they're just killing. He was shot in his neck, by the way. He died after the occupation forces fired a bullet into his neck. The first Palestinian killed in 2018. And it's really sad. These are children that are dying. And this, it seems like the world is just silently watching, which is why I wanted to talk about it. Even though it's really sad, I feel like it needs and deserves to be talked about. Because you won't find Western media really exposing what Israel is doing and how they're doing it. Or they'll just make excuses and say that the Palestinians are being violent, which, if they are being violent, they're being violent rightfully so. It's interesting because there's an article talking about how Ahed Tamimi, the 16-year-old that has been arrested, she... in 2016, was denied in the U.S. A visa for speaking. She wanted to tour the U.S. On a speaking tour, and so she applied for a visa, and the U.S. denied her one. And this article kind of says, the title is, "Why is the West praising Malala but ignoring Ahed?" And it brings about a really interesting point. I don't want to compare the two because they're both great women, but I do want to bring up some very interesting points, because Ahed, like Malala, she has a substantial history of standing up against injustices. She's been protesting the theft of land and water by Israeli settlers, endured personal sacrifice. She's lost an uncle, multiple cousins. Her parents and her brother have been arrested time and time again. Her mom was shot in the leg. And then 2 years ago, another video of hers went viral when she was trying to protect her little brother from being taken by a soldier.
Ugh.
Still though, it feels like there's like a deafening silence when it comes to, supporting her. And there's like a hashtag now, Free Ahead or Save
Ahead. Yeah, Free Ahead.
Yeah, Free Ahead.
Free Ahead Tamimi.
Which is great. And I'm glad that there's something. But I also want to bring about the reason for the silence, and I think there's this widespread acceptance of state-sanctioned violence, a widespread acceptance of state-sanctioned violence as legitimate, which is what Israel has been doing for decades. Hostile actions of non-state actors like the Taliban or Boko Haram fighters, those are viewed as unlawful, and similar aggression by the state is often deemed appropriate. Which is really interesting when you think about that. Because if another entity had done the exact same things that Israel is doing, you would find it as like a very terrible act. But this includes not only the overt forms of violence like drone attacks, unlawful arrests, police brutality, but also less obvious assaults like allocation of resources, including land and water. The state justifies these actions by presenting the victims of its injustices as a threat to the functioning of the state. And once declared a threat, the individual is easily reduced to a bare life, a life without political value. And terrorists often fall within this category. Because this individual is therefore now made a target of sovereign violence because it threatens the functioning of the state. Because the Israeli police, they've deployed a very similar strategy because they argue that extending Ahed's detention is necessary because she, quote, poses a danger to soldiers and state representatives and she could obstruct the functioning of the state and the investigation. And I think that's truly absurd because she's a 16-year-old girl. And casting an unarmed Palestinian like Ahed, who was simply exercising her right to protect her family and her well-being, with all of her might as a 16-year-old, as the same light as a terrorist is like unfathomable and disgusting. And these framings, they open a way for authorizing excessive torture, and which Israel
seems to be all about.
Yeah, and Israel's education minister, Naftali Bennett, he has said he wants Ahed and her entire family to, quote, finish their lives in prison.
Oh, that is so stupid.
Yeah. And I think her suffering and her the silence around it also exposes the West's selective humanitarianism, because only particular bodies and causes are deemed worthy of intervention. Whether it's Malala, because she was affected by terrorists and whatever, but this went, it's the language, this I think it's just, you normalize the suffering of certain people. And I feel like the suffering of Palestinians have been so has been so normalized where people don't even...
Yeah, they don't even care that the whole weird group of people is taking over a country that's not theirs.
And I think it's disgusting because girls like Ahed who critique and fight for their country, they should be like risen up and they should be valued and protected, and so everyone else in Palestine should be. I think her power, it threatens to reveal like this ugly face of colonialism, because her feminism is not, it's political and it's not sexual or focused on commodities or something like that. She truly represents just like, her plight is just like to her family, to free her people, and her and I love how active her family is and how they won't rest, but they are very worried about her, and her father especially fears that they're going to be fighting for her for a long time, and she's going to be in jail for a long time, kind of as a message for other Palestinian youth. Palestinian teenagers, they typically face about 6 to 9 months in prison for charges of stone throwing. And Israel routinely targets the youngest and most vulnerable members of the politically active Palestinian families to exert pressure on their family and the entire community to end all social mobilization.
Ugh, stone throwing. I would throw a stone at Netanyahu's head.
Yeah.
Directly into his eyeball.
That's what I want to talk about. There's also this last... So, on November 1st is... it marked 100... November 1st of last year now, which is 2017. It marked 100 years since the Balfour Declaration was issued on November 2nd, 1917. What is this? This is a very important letter for Israelis and Palestinians for different reasons. This letter contained it was written by the then British Foreign Secretary Arthur Balfour to Lord Walter Rothschild, who was a leader of the Britain's Jewish community. In the letter, Balfour expressed his support for the quote establishment in Palestine for a national home for the Jewish people. The declaration was only 67 words long and is widely celebrated by the Israelis, but Palestinians regard it as a betrayal which triggered the colonization of their land. So I think it's important with Anna's story as well, just to understand the history behind what is happening now and just how long people have been suffering and fighting for their rights and freedom. Yeah. And, sorry that it's kind of a bummer episode, I guess, it frustrates me so fucking much what Israel is doing and how I can't do anything about it or even just, like, talk shit about Israel without being labeled as an anti-Semite.
I hate that no one will do anything about it. Like, people keep condemning them. Like, the UN has condemned them for years, but there's nothing
the UN is the
really
one that
do.
Made Israel, so fuck with the UN. Like,
no, the UN is the one that's actually being like, what you're doing is illegal under international law.
Well, now they are, but they were, I mean, I think it's just convenient justice.
I don't think the UN knew what monsters the government would become.
Yeah.
Like, they really took, like, someone gave them, like, a piece of bread, and then they got cocky, and they're like, no, you need to give us the whole bread. And it's like, no, you need to share. And they're like, no. Like, it all just, like, went to their head.
Everyone
and all of a sudden, they own it all.
Zionism, I think.
Yeah, definitely.
And, yeah. So, yeah.
Crazy Zionists.
So that's that.
You don't, no one is afforded anything in this world.
No one.
Nothing belongs to you.
No.
Nothing belongs to you.
That laptop you own. I don't care how million of years ago you had this and my, in this Bible that I look at, my people were here. Like, I don't fucking give a shit, man.
Nothing. Nothing belongs to you.
Yeah.
Ever. Not even the things you own belong to you. That's how easily they can be taken away from you. Nothing belongs to you. Land doesn't belong to you. You can buy some land. Guess what? In the end, it doesn't belong to you.
No.
No. You can take it with force, it still doesn't belong to you. Nothing belongs to you. Get over it. Move on with your life. Understand that you can't have whatever you want. Israel.
Yeah.
Oh, God. I'm just going
to
pass.
Get back to reality. No.
We don't live in reality.
For the last 15-ish minutes, I think we should talk about something personal.
Yay.
Personal time.
Yay.
And I was like, what should we talk about? And I was like, I don't know, something fun, like mental health.
Yeah. We're going to talk about what it's like to deal with mental health with your, like, weird Middle Eastern families who don't truly acknowledge mental health as a thing. And in my experience as, like, a depressed person with, like, anxiety and other shitty stuff, like, my whole life, like, I've been in therapy only because, like, my parents do not understand what the fuck. Like, Shireen was telling me yesterday, like, they say things like, how can you be unhappy? Like, you have everything.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's not how it works.
It's like, why are you sad? Like, you have, we give you everything. Like, you have a house, you have a, you went to school, you went to college, do you know how many people would kill for one of those things?
Yeah, and it's like this thing where Middle Eastern parents, like, they fought so hard to come to America that they don't, like, there's no sign, you don't show weakness. Like, crying is weakness, telling someone you're depressed is weakness. Like, you don't show weakness. Like, culturally, weakness is not okay.
No.
Like, you can't show emotion.
We're,
like,
so,
you have to be strong.
I feel like
and serious.
We're so emotionally stunted.
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
Yeah, and my... I am I've dealt with very intense depression for the most of my life, and anxiety and a little bit of OCD sprinkled in there. And I have my share of mental health issues. And when I was a minor, before I was 18, my parents forced me to go to a psychiatrist, and I was very much against it because I just didn't like being told what to do.
Yeah.
And I still see someone now, but, like, it's different when it's on your own terms. And I think my parents definitely didn't think of it as, like, a long-term commitment. They were like, she'll see a doctor, and in a few years she'll be better.
Yeah.
And my mom would say things like, I miss the old Shireen, or, like, where did the happy Shireen go? And
that stuff isn't helpful.
Like, you know,
four and,
like,
couldn't read the news, so I didn't know everything was falling apart.
Yeah. But my parents are very supportive now. I think they understand that it's chemicals in your brain, and if you have bad eyesight, you get glasses, and if you have chemicals that aren't, like, getting along, then you get some help with that, too. So it's like, I think my parents are extremely supportive now, and I really, really am appreciative of that, but there's this, like, my cousins and my uncles and aunts who have mental health issues and depression and stuff, I feel like a lot of them refuse to go to a doctor because they don't see it as something to go to a doctor for.
Right.
And that's really sad to me because mental health and all the terminology, it barely exists in Arabic.
No, I mean, it doesn't really exist in Iran, too. Like, I remember, like, talking to family members in Iran, and, like, I have a cousin who clearly needs therapy to this day because he lives so far out in the countryside, and he won't talk to anyone, and he thinks everyone's against him, and he went through a really bad divorce, and his own sister's constantly giving him shit, and... I one time mentioned, maybe you should talk to someone. And he looked at me like I was fucking crazy. Like, he was like, talk to who? And I was like, a doctor? And he's like, no. So that's, like, the level of, like, they just don't do it. Like, you deal with it yourself. You have to be strong. You go through it. You keep your head up. You don't give in to the emotions.
Yeah.
And, like, my whole life, like, I've dealt with depression and, like, just not wanting to exist and all that shit. And my family just, to this day, is very like, well, you just get through it.
Yeah,
you just wake up in the morning, you get out of bed, you just get through it.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, but some days.
Yeah.
Like, I remember I saw a psychiatrist my whole life. Like, I've been, like, tried different types of medication. Like, I'm not on anything now because I am one of those people that, unfortunately, like, antidepressants don't work very well on. Like, it just doesn't do anything for me. And when I go back, they prescribe you more and more and more.
Yeah.
And so, like, I get to a point where, like, I'm sorry, I just cannot take, like, four types of medication a day. Like, I'm not that kind of person. So, like, I had to find my own way to get through it. Like, going on hikes or whatever the fuck. Like, walking. I bought a stationary bike to like bike on whenever I'm stressed so I can just sweat. Like that's the only way I can deal with it. Cause I just, and but like my whole life, my dad would always be like, you don't need the pills. I'm like, you don't know what I need. Yeah. You're not in my head and you're not a doctor. And I understand that you think that because of how you were raised and culturally where you're from, but really like it's not really your place to say. Yeah. But that's my whole life. It was just always like, why? Why are you sad?
Yeah.
Like, look at your house. I bought you a car. Like,
yeah, exactly.
It's like, and it's like, yeah, it's not, you can buy me that, everything though. In the world, and I will still look at you and think, I want to die. Like, there's nothing you can do. And that's what's fucked up. And as I've gotten older, I've started to realize, like, it's not really any of their business. I don't have to be like, I need you to know that I'm sad. Now that I've gotten older, it's like, you know what? I'm a sad person. Like, I remember one time I went, when I was in therapy once, my therapist asked me to bring my parents in, and I was like, that's not a good idea, but she was like, we should do it, and we brought my parents in, and like, my mom like told her, like, we don't cry in this family, it's weakness, and the woman like looked at, you know, like, you guys know Nick Young meme confused face, like, she like, Nick Young confused face, my mom, and my mom was like, no, what? And then like, I remember my doctor was like, or my therapist was like, you can cry as much as you want. You cry wherever the fuck you want. So now I just cry everywhere. And that's factual. I cry everywhere.
Well, that's good.
I will cry now.
Crying is very cathartic.
It is. And that's what she told me. She's like, you are allowed to cry and you can cry and cry and cry. And that is okay. And that was like a big step for me where I was like, yeah, fuck that. I can cry. Cause my whole life, whenever I'd cry, my mom would be like in Iran, they say a thing where like, zeste, like it's ugly. Like, don't cry. Yeah. It's ugly. You don't want people to see you cry. It's weak. And you're like, oh, fuck you.
Yeah.
It's not ugly. It's human. It's emotion. Deal with it.
Yeah.
Have an emotion other than go to school and get an engineering degree.
Yeah.
Jesus.
Yeah, I think I'm coming around to that also. Like, I worried my parents a lot growing up because my mom is a very, like, mentally strong person and she doesn't really understand how sad I can get.
But that's the thing is they had to be strong.
Yeah.
They came from a foreign country and had to build up a whole life.
Exactly. So.
Sorry you raised a little puss ass with a nice house in America.
Yeah.
With Instagram.
Like, the holidays are really hard for me. I wasn't doing so well mentally and, I get like that when I'm home sometimes. And on New Year's, my sister and her white boyfriend went out and my parents both went out and I waited until one by one they all left the house and then I just cried. I was like, yep, I'm sad. Like, I waited until they were all gone and admitted to myself that I wasn't feeling that great and I just cried to myself, by myself. And then the family cat, like, went and comforted me and I was okay.
Cats always do that.
They're so intelligent, cute. But I think I'm trying to, because I've taken so many different... I did. But I've taken so many different kinds of medication, and it's really frustrating and daunting when none of them work. And
it is.
And when you're faced with this decision, like, do I go and try another one and see if that one doesn't work? Do I see someone else? And it's really hard because you don't know what to do. I think that's why I want to talk about mental health, honestly, is because I'm kind of going through this weird, I don't want to say rut. I think my mind goes through phases and, I'm trying to get out of this one.
Do you think you have seasonal defective disorder? I can't remember what that is.
I just feel like I've been,
I definitely have it.
I think I do, but I also just, I think when I'm not working on like a film or like on a music video or something, I kind of lose my purpose and I'm like, oh, I'm my place in this world is meaningless. Everything doesn't my poetry book didn't sell or like my I'm talentless or whatever. And I get into this really negative cycle where I just like compare myself to other people, which is never a good idea, but it's so easy to do in LA.
Right.
But then,
it's hard to see outside yourself sometimes.
Yeah, and I think I'm trying to get better at handling my emotions because we didn't really get a good idea of that growing up.
Emotions were just like, don't have them.
Yeah, exactly.
So like when you start to have them, you're like, I don't know what to do with this.
Yeah.
And it's uncontrollable.
And it's like, what's wrong? And I never want my parents to worry about me, so I don't want to show them what I'm doing so badly.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But I think, I'd like to think that mental health is getting more talked about in Middle Eastern communities. I just wish it was more acceptable to go talk to someone. Because, like, my uncle and my aunts and, like, even some cousins of mine, like, I just want them to know that it's not, there's no shame behind it. Mm-hmm. You know, there's no, everyone needs help sometimes, and I definitely need help a lot of the time, mm-hmm. just to feel like I can, I'm okay. And, because everyone, I think everyone deserves to be happy, and some people just need a little help.
I agree.
Yeah. This episode's still a bummer.
I cried.
Crying is so cathartic, though. And I went through, before that happened, I don't know when last time I cried, but there's something like...
I cried.
I'm gonna go shopping after this.
For what?
I don't know. Just that, like, always gets me up.
Just like a...
Just like walking through a store, being like...
What's it called? Oh, it's called, that? When you shop to get, like, as like a therapy.
Retail therapy? Yeah, I'm going to retail therapize after this.
Yeah. I'll probably do something. I'll hang out with Abby. Yeah, I haven't seen her in a long time because I've been sick. Dude, don't get the flu. It's not fun. Go get the flu shot. I didn't get one. Maybe that's why I got so fucking sick.
I don't know. I don't think flu shots matter that much.
My sister said I should.
You just need to wash your hands.
She's like, get a flu shot.
You just need to wash your hands. I've never gotten a flu shot in my life. Not once. Just wash your hands.
The flu is not fun.
Wash your hands and don't, like...
The body aches, man. Like, the body... Mm. You just, like, feel like you got hit by a train.
Did you have any, did you have any, like, fever dreams?
Yeah.
Those fucking wild.
Oh my God, Anna. I had a dream. I thought I died.
Oh, that's wild.
I was in my car driving a street that I knew, and then a car just appeared in an intersection in front of me, and I gasped, and I didn't dream the impact, but I gasped awake, and in my bed I gasped.
Oh, Jesus.
And it was like a very out of body, like...
You had a fever dream.
I had a fever dream. Fever dream. But yeah, thanks for... This is our first episode of 2018, so...
Yeah, so happy 2018.
So let's try on...
Let's party.
...the new year and party.
Yeah.
Party.
Don't worry, guys. We're not going anywhere. We're going to keep doing
We're going to keep doing it. Just stay patient. Be patient with us, I mean.
Yeah.
And we love all of you, and especially all of you guys that comment on our Twitter or post on Twitter and Instagram or wherever. Mm-hmm. We look at all of them, and we really appreciate you. And
yeah, that's really us responding.
That's really us. We don't have a team.
We have literally nothing.
Yeah. But for all the links that we talked about today, I can put them on the Tumblr, ethnicallyambiguous69.tumblr.com.
Yeah, we will soon have a website again. Don't worry.
We will soon have a website again. But until then, they'll be on the Tumblr as a little meeting place for y'all. And yeah. So thanks for being you. You guys mean more to us than you could ever know.
Mm-hmm. Shereen, you gonna bite that ass?
I'd bite that ass!